Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm also the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts here in Norwood, Massachusetts. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, mixed martial arts. Come see us. We'll make your life better. We'll be your tribe. We're the Power of the Tribe here. Find your tribe. Change your life. You just have to wait a little bit longer, Dan.
Yeah, a little bit longer. Do you think there's... I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
You know what? I was speaking with Dimitri. I just sensed that yesterday. So today's May 8th for people who are listening to this of the pandemic, May 8th, 2020. And yesterday, I don't know what, I just sensed that people are kind of ready to move on. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Like, so we have a business. My neighbor's HR at a business, and both businesses are like, they're starting to talk about like reopening and how are we going to go about it. And so I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I think it's like a weird light. It's like you see a light. It's not like a bright light. You're sort of like, what is that light? Like, it's a weird looking light. You know what I mean? Like, because things are going to, I think things are, we're within about 2 weeks of starting to reopen. It's just a gut feeling. It's just like the date you kind of hear.
I think so.
Around. And I think, I'm not sure if it's based on anything. I think it's like, well, Dan, everyone is just sort of feeling like it's time to go. And
yeah.
Everyone's losing a lot of money and a lot of jobs. And
that's one thing I would like to see, Dan. Have you seen this? You know, you have the governor saying we're shut down until May 18th. Are they telling us, I haven't seen this, that here's when we're going to open and why we're going to open. Here's the criteria we're using and here's the things we're considering that go into that decision.
I feel like that's not happening.
It doesn't happen
anywhere almost in the world,
certainly not
in this country, where like different states just open differently. And
I think that's poor leadership, because I feel like if they were pointing to actual facts and data, then I would feel more comfortable with their leadership.
Right. Because that's what I'm saying. It feels like maybe May 18th, maybe a little longer than that, is when things are going to open. But I don't know why. You know, it just feels like everyone's sort of fed up and everyone's sort of feeling safer and the weather's getting nicer. Everyone's tired of it. And
the two metrics that I look at, so mass.gov, they post stats on the COVID crisis every day. And the one I look at is number of people in ICU, number of patients in the ICU, and then the number of overall hospitalized patients. And those are really flat. I would
for
say
for a long time though, right? For a month.
Yeah, they're relatively flat. And I think the ICU number yesterday went down pretty dramatically. I don't know if it was just a reporting thing, if it was a real thing, but it went from, I think, 922 to 852.
So again, you'd like to hear like, here is the reason we're opening, because the ICU has gone down so this percentage. You know, like, so you'd like to hear some reason.
Right. And then they list the availability of overall beds and ICU beds. And we're well below 50% usage, I think, for everything.
We barely ever got above that, did we?
I don't think they did get above it. I'm not sure, though. But I thought that was the whole premise anyways. We're going to spread the curve.
We don't want to... I feel like no one has said the term flatten the curve in like a month. You know, what happened to flatten the curve?
They stopped talking about that.
What happened to ventilators? I do feel like there's a moving target on this.
It's all very moving. But it would be good if they were a little bit more explicit leadership with, here's what we're going to do. And then when we see these numbers, like if they said, as soon as we get under 700 ICU beds, we're going to look to start opening up. That would seem rational to me, right?
Yeah. So just some rationale instead of, we're going to open on May 18th seems about right.
Yeah.
The other thing about the hazy light at the end of the tunnel is, what does reopening mean? Because businesses, I think, what'll happen is businesses will reopen, bars and restaurants will reopen. But what about, what's happening with like sporting events and the theater and movie theaters? And like, I can't imagine they just let everyone pack in.
Doesn't make sense. The packing in, right?
Yeah.
Thank God I don't like to go to the movies anyway. I don't like to do any of that stuff.
Yeah. Those packed clubs at least from my youth. I don't know when you is five deep at the bar and everyone's pressed together. Like,
are you saying you're not going to go to a rave anytime soon, Dan?
Well, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
But it'll be a distant rave. Like, there won't be that many
virtual
people.
Rave. Yeah.
There won't be that many people there. I just can't imagine that kind of scene being
I think
allowed.
Yeah, I think most states have some sort of phasing program.
Because even that, they're like, they'll have football season, but it'll be every other seat. Like, how do you do that? Like, you say we're only honoring even tickets today. So then you're like, well, me and my wife can't go because we have tickets next to each other. So no one can go with their friends because it's every other. Like, how do you
I don't know.
You know?
I don't know. Interesting.
You know, how do you tell people that they're honoring, especially something like Gillette, which is all season ticket holders? You tell them, like, we're going to honor half of them. I don't know how that works. And I think nobody knows. Nobody. You know what I mean? Like, head of the NFL doesn't know. Robert Kraft doesn't know. Nobody knows how it's going to work.
Right.
So it's a little unclear what opening up means.
You know? Definitely. There is a sporting event tomorrow.
Yes. That's a big
UFC
return to normal.
249?
I think so.
I'm excited. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
I had stopped
getting pay-per-views. I just sort of got mad. You know, it's just like too much money over the years. Like, I used to get every single pay-per-view. Maybe you
what
still
is it
do.
Now? Like $65, I think, right?
Yeah, or up to some more 70,
is
I
it?
Think.
Well, I
to
have
get high def.
I have ESPN Plus.
Do they still do that? They were like, if you want high def, it's $15 more. And I'm like, what do you, everyone's getting high def. Maybe they stopped doing that because now everything's high def.
Whenever I buy it, it seems to be one price. I don't know. But yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe on ESPN Plus it's one price. Yeah. So, but I stopped about the time I got ESPN Plus.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know what? There's like 10 fights in the prelims, and I know those fighters. So I'll watch the prelims.
Oh, cool.
And then ESPN Plus shows the main card 2 weeks later. So
did they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's usually, I don't think I ever avoided hearing the outcome of the main event, probably the co-main event. But usually, you know, the first two or three fights on the main card, I could avoid hearing what happened.
Got it.
So that way I could watch all the prelim fights and then, you know, wait 2 weeks and watch three of the other fights. So I stopped buying them. But I'll get Saturdays.
I'm buying it
for
sure.
Yeah, I'm buying it for sure.
I expect it will be one of their biggest sales nights of all time.
Yeah, there's no other sporting events for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And I mean, last night they had like a 3-hour special live announcement of the NFL schedules. Like,
really?
Yeah, like who? Like, I think you even knew which teams they'd be playing, but it was like when exactly, like what date for which team, and it was like
so. They're planning on the NFL is planning on starting in September.
Yeah,
or whatever.
They're planning to just go for now.
Wow. Good for them. Wow.
But I mean, you see how starved everyone is when it's like 3-hour special for waiting for them to announce team by team what the schedule is.
So let me ask you, Dan, when I look at social media, there seems to be a couple different camps about Brady at the Buccaneers and Gronk down there. Now, do you have thoughts about it, feelings about it?
You mean New England camps?
Yeah.
Well, I think my diehard, lifelong Patriot fans, I've heard a lot of anger, like Brady's dead to me kind of feeling. I've seen some posts where
traitor,
because he planned it with Gronk, and Gronk, wouldn't come back to the Patriots and wouldn't only go to the Buccaneers, so he's sort of a traitor. I guess if there's another camp, I'm in the other camp.
I
just sort of like Brady, I think.
Yeah, me too.
He gets a lot of hate from a lot of the national media, a lot of these like cheating accusations, and he's overrated and he's over the hill. And I think whenever anyone exhibits greatness, there's this urge in a lot of people to tear them down. And I don't like it. I never do it.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah. I think he's terrific. Yeah.
People like to attack all the hate. There's people hate LeBron James, right? Like,
do they? Yeah, I don't follow basketball
that much.
He's just
hated. Yeah. And it's just sort of like, I don't like this sort of instinct to like just attack people that made it get to the top in any field. It could be, you know, you could be Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates.
That seems to be a typical dynamic. People sort of cheer somebody up, and then when they get up there to the top, they get a little disgruntled and they want to tear them down a little bit.
There was a very clear, do you remember, because we knew Kenny Florian at the time when he was just starting to, you knew him before he started at all, to fighting for the championship. And when he was sort of a scrappy, kind of nerdy looking up-and-comer, he was really popular. Like, everyone really liked him. He was fighting for the belt. He was a sort of a real underdog against Sean Sherk.
Yeah.
I was in the stadium when he was just battling, covered with blood, fighting Sean Sherk, who looked
crazy bloody.
He looked like
right?
the Hulk compared to Kenny. Yeah. Looked kind of much half his size. And I was in the stadium when they were all chanting Kenny's name.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I was with Kenny later that night and people stopping him just like in that awestruck, like, Kenny, that was awesome, you know? Then he became like a big name after that, and he was fighting big names, and he went back for another title fight. He went on a 6-fight win streak, I think, after that.
Mm-hmm.
And he got all kinds of hate.
Hmm.
All kinds of hate. As soon as he was like one of the big, big names, suddenly it was like, you know, you just read sort of the chat groups and that kind of stuff, and suddenly you'd see haters popping up where they weren't there before.
People like the underdog.
Yeah.
A lot of people dislike the overdog, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I think that's a lot of the Brady hate. And then it's just die hard.
Yeah.
You left our team. You left our tribe. You're on another tribe.
I'm so happy, Dan. I got two teams that I can root for this year.
Everyone is going to watch Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Just from a business standpoint, I think it's crazy more teams didn't try to. I don't understand. Tennessee Titans didn't try to sign him. Chargers didn't try to sign him. It's like, who's going to watch the Titans and the Chargers? Like, now, everyone wants to see
the
Buccaneers.
They didn't try to sign him, or did Brady just really like to go to Tampa Bay? Was that the idea?
I think in the case of the Chargers, he didn't want to go to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I think the Titans did not try to sign him. I think they're going with Ryan Tannehill.
Cool.
This is NFL Talk. Welcome to NFL Talk.
I love it. I can't wait for the NFL to start again.
So, so tomorrow night, though, back to more.
Great fights tomorrow night, too.
The headliner, Tony Ferguson against Gaethje.
All right. What is your pick?
Ferguson.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
Dimitri, do you have a pick? Not so much.
Ferguson's on a 12-fight.
I kind of take that safe route with these guys. Until I see somebody beat John Jones, I can't believe he can lose. And Tony Ferguson has lost in the past, but not, like you said, 12-fight win streak.
I can't even remember him losing. I think he lost a decision to...
To
Michael Johnson?
Michael Johnson, yeah.
And it was close, right?
Probably. I don't really remember, to be honest with you. Yeah.
So I've never seen anyone... I think Pettis was doing well against him, but then got overwhelmed.
Pettis was... Everybody does well.
Yeah.
Did you see the Barbosa fight? They put that up recently. That was a brutal fight, and actually Barbosa was landing a lot. So Barbosa was basically won the first round. It was close, but he also... They took a point away from Ferguson for an illegal upkick. So Barbosa wins the first round 10-8. And then I don't know if it went to the third round, but like the second round, Barbosa won. And then finally in the third round, Ferguson just wears him down. And Barbosa puts his head down and tries to shoot a double. Like, that's how much Ferguson could put the pressure on you where you're winning and you still can't take the pressure.
Yeah, and Barbosa's a pure striker, so if he's shooting,
it's like, what a mistake, but he just got, I think he got broken down, and
It's similar to Connor shooting on Nate Diaz. They're just like, I have to shoot, I'm getting beat, you know, I'm starting to lose it.
It's almost like a mental psychological break.
I think also if you feel like I'm going to get knocked out, I got to grab him.
Maybe you're right,
But Barbosa's amazing, but I think Gaethje beat... Barbosa
out pretty cleanly, like
probably
really fast first round.
Probably Barbosa is a better technical stand-up fighter, but Gaethje is also relentless and tough.
Reckless.
So I'm just picturing these two coming at each other in the main event. It should be, I can't imagine, you know, you never know.
I think here's my prediction, Dan. Somebody's going to be bleeding.
Yeah.
There's going to be like at least a bloody nose or something.
That's the thing about Ferguson.
He hits these guys, and they look like they got beat in the face with a bag of rocks at the end of the fights.
Both fighters also beat Cowboy, who's a real tough matchup.
And he's fighting Pettis.
Yeah, oh, is he?
Yeah, on the same card, this card, this set, tomorrow.
That's a good fight.
That's a rematch. Did you know that?
Yeah, I can't. Who won the first one?
Pettis won by left kick to the liver.
Oh.
If you can believe that. Pretty amazing, huh?
Have you taken a liver shot ever?
Yeah.
Not
fun.
Yeah.
Not fun, not funny.
It hurts a lot.
Hurts a lot, yeah. Who do you have in that fight?
Pettis.
I'm going to go with Cowboy. I don't know why.
I just feel, for me, it's only because I feel like Cowboy's on the downward trend.
Okay.
And Pettis has, I feel like, been coming up a little bit. Like he's trying to, he'd been sort of down and he's sort of rebound, fighting a little better lately.
You're probably right.
But I don't know. You know.
And he beat him once already. Stopped him once. There was a long time ago, though. I think it was 2013 maybe or something. Long time ago.
So, but I don't know. You know, it's just like,
then
there's those two monstrous heavyweights fighting, Rozenstruik and
they're fighting tomorrow?
Yeah.
That's on the same card?
I think so. I think it's Rozenstruik and
Ngannou?
Ngannou. I think that's tomorrow.
Or is that Wednesday? Because they're doing a Saturday, Saturday or something.
I hope I'm not getting the wrong one, but
Ngannou, those guys are
unbelievable. They'll just knock you into orbit. Both of them.
Yeah.
The only thing is sometimes there's a fight like that, and you're like, someone's head's going into the 10th row, and then it's somehow a boring fight.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Like Ngannou, Derek Lewis or something, is like suddenly they both get tired. The big guys get tired, and they don't want their own heads knocked off.
I think so.
Kind of.
I think that was an anomaly.
Lumbering around. I remember that happens from time to time, though. Can't miss. It's like Kimbo Slice's debut when they put him against Houston Alexander. Remember those guys? And
I remember that.
And it was like, well, can't miss. Houston Alexander tries to launch you into orbit. Kimbo just brawls like, this is going to be huge. And it was just an all-time horrible fight. Super boring. They circled and circled. I saw someone took that fight and like sped it up and put the Benny Hill music on, like,
oh my god,
just like show them. They were like circling and circling and circling the ring. It was a
my son and movie. I watched that. We found it the funniest fight of all time for some reason. And Houston Alexander, he bought into the hype train. I think he could have fought a different fight and done better, but
he probably could have knocked Kimbo out if he really came after him.
Yeah.
He was scared.
He bought into it. Yeah, really.
It was
strange.
Funny to see. It was like the UFC fighters, half of them bought into it. Like Kimbo came on to the Ultimate Fighter and I think got picked first for Rampage's team. And, you know.
Yeah, he didn't really come through, though, right?
What are you doing? He fought, what's his name?
Roy Nelson?
Yeah, Roy Nelson, who just demolished him.
Just demolished him.
Took him down. He couldn't get up.
Right. Well, also on the card, local guy, Charles Rosa.
Yeah.
And I know you know his father. He trained with his dad.
Yeah.
Chucky.
So, yeah, Charles Rosa is a great local fighter. I don't know. He doesn't fight local out of Florida. He fights out of Florida, but he grew up around here.
Yeah.
John and I strangely know and have trained with his dad, Chuck Rosa, who is a pro boxer, super tough guy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Super tough. That you don't make anybody tougher than that.
Yeah. We used to do sparring where they would just say, you know, like most people would put the stomach pads to be hit in the stomach, and he would just not have the pads and just say, you can just hit me in the stomach, because he was just a big,
he's invulnerable, yeah,
tough guy, and he was just like, I don't need the pads, just, and so you kind of go light, and you go, no, you can go full. You're like, and you'd hit his stomach and be like, yeah, it's not hurting him.
he has a charity, I believe, Chucky Rosa does, and people go up in the North Shore of Mass where he lives, and they all go in like the frigid water. Did you ever see that on Facebook?
I think I've seen it.
I gotta go do it someday. Yeah. It looks pretty cool. Like the dead of winter, they go into the sea.
Yeah, he has a charity. They raise money. It's part of Charles Rosa's story too. He had two older brothers that unfortunately died of accidental drug overdoses. Two brothers. So it's a terrible, tragic backstory in the family, but they're both, you know, I think it drives Charles Rosa, and I think it's the reasoning behind his dad's charity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so you, I'm sure you can...
intriguing story, intriguing matchup.
I'm sure if you go on Facebook or something, you can find Chucky Rosa's charity. And
he's a... the fighter is a really exciting fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's fighting an exciting guy, a guy named Bryce Mitchell. He was on the Ultimate Fighter. I believe he hasn't lost yet. Like, I think he lost.
He's 12-0.
He's 12-0. He didn't lose on the Ultimate Fighter. He lost on the Ultimate Fighter to that Irish guy.
Okay.
Who I think won the whole show. I believe he did. The Straight Blast Gym guy from Ireland beat him on the show, but he's a super tough and super exciting fighter, too. So that's a can't miss fight.
He's got 9 submission wins, 12-0.
Yeah.
He's a favorite -165 over Rosa, who's +140.
Yeah, so that's another. So the whole card, if you know fighters like that, so there's the big name fighters that we already mentioned,
right.
And then it, like, that's even the early prelims.
I'm going with Rosa, of course.
Yeah. Even the early prelims have tough and exciting
matches.
Here's
another really exciting fight. Vincente Luque versus Nico Price.
Yeah, those are, see, that's a good thing. They're not big names, but that's an exciting matchup.
They come to fight.
Yeah.
Luque is a -280 versus Nico Price +230. I didn't think he'd be that big of a favorite.
Yeah.
Interesting. He's a super tough guy, but all his fights are like really brutal brawls, right?
Yeah.
That should be
I think, again, they were able to kind of, there's been so much time off, they could pick matchups and pick fighters,
right.
You know, because they're not like, you know, we're not coming off 8 in a row where they're like, who's
right.
available?
And somebody's
you know,
injured.
Everyone's
or
available,
like
you know, or lots of people.
I'll take
available.
The underdog in that fight. If you're going to give me +230, is that what it is?
Yeah, was that Ngannou fight tomorrow?
I'm still looking, yeah. So the next fight on the card is Jacare versus Uriah Hall.
Yeah,
what an amazing fight that is. That could be a headliner.
That's I got to go with Jacare.
He's a slight favorite, -125.
Jacare is someone who, to me, looks like he should be a world champion, right? He is like,
he does.
No one's going to submit him. And
no.
Then he's pretty good stand-up. Like he throws
a powerful guy,
haymakers.
Man. Oh, yeah.
So it's like you're not safe on the feet. You don't want to go to the ground with him. You know, it's like world-class talent.
And I think
he finds a way to lose, though, sometimes. Like, he lost to an upkick once, I think. And
I think the way to beat him is fight at a distance. Maybe take him down. I think you could take him down. I mean,
you're not going to submit him, but you may be able to kind of control him.
A little bit, yeah. He's more of a top-game fighter, I think. If he takes you down, you got to be careful. But maybe you could take him down. Powerful guy, that's for sure. Yeah, I'll take him on that fight. And then we have Carla Esparza versus Michelle Waterson. I think they call her the Karate Hottie, right? Yeah. And Esparza is a -160. Waterson's +135. I don't know who to take on
I'd
that.
I'd take Esparza.
Is she the one that wears a singlet? Is she the wrestler?
Yeah, more of a wrestler. And I'm not sure.
Michelle's pretty good. I'll take the underdog
on that
one. I
don't know if she could withstand wrestling, though.
Then another great fight, one after another. Fabricio Werdum is -330 versus Alexei Olenek, one of my favorite all-time guys.
So these, for the grapplers out there, these are two of great grapplers, great MMA grapplers.
Yeah.
Verdum's a great anything grappler.
Alexei has got more Ezekiel chokes in MMA than
he's the one.
In history.
If anyone's, he's Ezekiel choked someone whilst I think the person was mounted
yeah.
on him.
Yeah.
Like, so he was on the bottom of mount.
I think he
and
put the
reached
guy to
up
sleep.
And
yeah.
choked the guy unconscious.
Well, I think he got it on the way down, to
yeah.
be honest. But yeah.
Yeah, so he didn't reach up, but yeah, but
pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Pretty badass.
I'm sure the guy was like, I'm in mount, like not frantically.
Yeah.
Now, but then the thing is, these guys are so good that, you know, people go in and go, don't get Ezekiel choked by the guy. That's his thing. He's really good.
Right.
He gets it anyway.
Sometimes. I think he's going to have a tough, it's going to be uphill battle against Ferdinand.
You're not going to, I sent you a text about this. We were talking. I think you're not going to catch a guy like Werdum in a move.
Oh,
you know what I
mean? It's a bit of trivia, Dan. I actually wrapped Alexei Olenek's hands once. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
It was at the, I think they called it the World Series of MMA or something. This group came in and they had one event down in Foxwoods, I think it was. And I was down there cornering Brett O'Terry. And Alexei Olenek was there. They said he needs somebody to wrap his hands. He had like, I think he had like a girlfriend there as an interpreter or something. And I went in there. I think he was fighting at 205 at the time is my memory. I could be wrong. It might have been 220 or something, but 225. But he said, yes, I want as little wrapping as possible because he's going to grapple. So they go, they're making him wrap his hands, but he doesn't really want his hands wrapped. So I did this ridiculous little wraps on his hands that were just like a complete waste of time. So then he goes out there and he fought like a New York guy. Jeez, I can't remember the guy. The guy was super tough that he fought. He was like an iron worker. Gee, I can't remember his name. It'll come to me after the podcast. tough local guy. And I'm like, oh, he's going to go in there and finesse it and grapple. No, they stood in front of each other the first 5 minutes and beat the hell out of each other. It was the most crazy brawl I've ever seen. It was unbelievable. And then in the second round, I think they started doing the same. And then somehow I think he took the guy down and maybe he won by rear naked choke or arm triangle or something.
I assume he won if he went from there to the UFC.
He did win, yeah.
So it's another exciting, that one I could see not being exciting because they're on the ground. And
I still love Olenek. I like both those guys, but
Olenek, these guys that are really, really good grapplers like Werdum, suddenly a supposed good grappler, they suddenly don't look so good.
Oh,
you know
right.
What I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like Damian Maia used to do that to people where they're like, this guy's right. Also a great grappler. What a great grappling matchup. And then suddenly the other guy just doesn't look great. Doesn't look great. Yeah.
Right. Then we have Pettis and Cowboy.
Yeah.
And Pettis is a -150 favorite, they're saying here. And Cowboy's +125. That's pretty close considering that.
That's almost even. Yeah.
That Pettis finished him before. That should be a great fight. Oh, we got another local flavor here. So we have at heavyweight, Greg Hardy is -195 against Jurgen De Castro, who's +165. He's a local guy.
That's a very even fight for me. DeCastro's good. I believe he got on, he won his fight, knocked a guy out on
Contender Series,
yeah. And then came to the UFC and knocked another guy out.
They got him at 6-0. He's 6-0, his record, I think Hardy is 5-2.
So Hardy's going to look like a specimen compared to him. You know what I mean? He's going to be bigger and more muscular, more athletic.
Oh, yeah. He's like 6'5". I think he weighed in at 265 and a half.
He's a monstrosity. But,
yeah.
But
the other guy's a tough fighter.
Yeah,
huh?
If I had to pick right now, I might pick De Castro. I think they like the look and the reputation of Hardy. As almost like a heel. So they probably are putting him in with the thought that Hardy will win, but I think he might spoil the party.
I think Hardy's so big too, he's a great prospect to figure. Yeah. When you're 6'5" and you get long arms and
pro, and I came from the NFL.
Came in the NFL, you're a great athlete. Yeah, they have high expectations. Should be a great fight. Another great fight. Calvin Kattar is -240 over Jeremy the Heathen Stevens, who's +200. That should be an awesome fight.
I would have said Stevens, but I think I saw he missed weight.
By like 4 pounds.
Which is a weird, because then you're always thinking, what's going on?
This guy's a pro, so you got to think he didn't train properly.
25th fight or whatever it is, and you miss weight by 4 pounds.
I think it's a great matchup for Calvin, because I think he's taller and he's longer, and Stevens can be hit, and Calvin has great punches.
I'm with you on that. I think Stevens is the bigger name, but it's... I get getting a bad vibe.
Calvin's getting a big name now, though, man, because he's just keeps winning and looking good. Even when he didn't win against that Kekistani guy, he still looked really good. Like, if that fight went 5 rounds, Calvin wins.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Nugano and Rosenstruck is on this card. Yeah. This is the most amazing card ever.
At least in a few years, probably.
So Nagano's -280 and Rosenstruck's +230.
I don't know about that.
I'll tell you something about Rosenstruck. When he fought... the last guy he fought, what's his name? Overeem.
Yeah.
Overeem a couple times blasted him and he literally didn't even blink. I mean, Overeem is another guy that's like 250 pounds or something, and he just would blast him and it's like he didn't even feel it. Yeah. So that is going to be something to see, that fight.
That might be Rosenstruik's fight, because I think
Ngannou, if I'm getting the odds, I would take the odds.
Ngannou sends people into orbit, but I think he broke a little mentally, right, when he fought Stipe. Right, didn't he? He said he was nervous.
Did he say that?
He said something about being nervous. But he might have just been justifying, like, I'll fight better.
I thought he just got out grappled. And what I was impressed in that fight, Dan, is he still had his power later in the fight, even after he did a lot of grueling grappling. So I actually gained some respect for him in that. Sometimes after you wrestle for 4 rounds, big power guys don't have power anymore. He still had it. So he's an exceptional fighter. Then we get a championship fight. This just keeps getting better. Henry Cejudo is fighting Dominic Cruz. And they get Cejudo here is a -220 favorite. Cruz is +180. I got to go with Cejudo. I mean, yeah, I see a lot of people picking Cruz, but
Cruz hasn't fought in
how
years,
long?
Right, I think.
Guess. I know. Four years.
Oh, I was going to say 2 years.
That's a long time.
His last fight, was it his loss to Dillashaw? I mean,
Dillashaw.
Yeah, to Cody Garbrandt.
I think so.
His last fight, right?
Yeah.
And that was a long time ago, yeah.
I think that's 4 years
ago. And that was a loss. So yeah. His last win.
He beat Dillashaw back in the day and beat the California kid favorite.
He's probably had about 3 or 4 fights in like literally 6 or 7 years. So it's
I have no idea.
It's hard.
Yeah.
He's amazing, but it's hard to think he'll beat.
If he can win, though, you know what's smart about him? I get to go in and get a shot at another belt.
Yeah.
And I get to beat this guy that everybody's put up there is so good. So it's brilliant for him. Great for him to take on the challenge.
It's a great opportunity.
It's really no lose situation for him. Then we have Tony Ferguson against Justin Gaethje. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I'm so glad we talked about this card. Ferguson's minus 190. Gaethje's plus 160. Like we both said, we got to go with Tony. I mean, I watched some of Tony's fights. Talk about cat energy. For me, he might epitomize that because he's always moving and rolling, and he gets hit, and he just seems to be able to roll with some of these shots. And
this 12-fight win streak, that is so rare, and they're at a high level.
He's so unpredictable. He comes at you. He's going to throw a hard inside leg kick. He's going to switch stances. He's going to punch you in the face, jab. He's going to hit you with an elbow. He's going to do a spinning elbow. You don't know. He's going to do an Imanari roll and try to heel hook you. He's going to roll forward and do like one of those weird helicopter kicks. You have no idea what the guy's going to do. And then he never stops.
And he nails people with elbows, too, all the time.
And he
like
never
this.
Takes a second. And you take him down, he gets his guard and starts elbowing you in the top of the head, and you feel like you're going to die.
And he never runs out of energy, too, right? Because that's sort of what we were saying earlier. That's why he wins. People can't, by round three, they're just battered and getting tired, and he's coming at the same speed.
And Gaethje doesn't pace himself, so this is going to just be a barn burner.
Yeah.
Tony Ferguson, I remember when he went against Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee mounted him at some point. Did you know that, Dan?
I saw the fight, but I forgot.
Yeah, so at one point, Lee takes him down, mounts him, and he's punching, and Ferguson is just like defending from the bottom of mount, and then clap, clap, 10 seconds left, and they made it through the round. Like he actually didn't get hurt that bad, but, I mean, he was in as bad a place as you can get, and then he ends up coming out and winning that fight after that, yeah.
So it's a great card.
Unbelievable.
And of course, we've literally never reviewed a card in this sort of detail, but it's a big event, though, because we're
huge
in the
event.
Middle of a quarantine. We're in the middle
so
of a
excited
lot.
To
it's
watch.
The first event of any sort in months.
Yeah. I mean, I want us to be safe. I don't want anyone to get sick or get hurt, but I think it's going to be good for the morale of the country, right? Or people who like this type
of
sport.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good about it. Yeah.
I would think for the morale of a lot of people listening to this show that also watch MMA.
Yeah.
I think probably a lot of people are interested.
Definitely. And then the people like jiu-jitsu, there was it last weekend where Vinny Magalhaes went against Craig Jones? They had some kind of submission.
I heard
thing.
About it, but I don't know what happened. Or
Craig Jones, like, ripped his leg off. It was unbelievable. And Vinny doesn't even tap. It's so weird. He turned his leg so far around, Dan. I can't even explain it. I was looking at it, and I'm like, how does that happen? And he didn't tap, but then somehow he was like, yeah, maybe we should stop because something bad happened. So I didn't even get the details. Like, I'm not even sure what exactly happened to his leg, but not good. Craig Jones looks so good lately, and especially in that match. I mean, that's why I like him. Gordon Ryan and Gary Tonin for submission wrestling is that they just attack you. Like, they do not stop attacking. They are trying to finish you all the time. Kind of like Ferguson, and it just makes for exciting matchups and matches. You know what I mean? They don't want to win by points. They want to submit you.
Do you feel you're influenced by that? Like you? When
I'm trying to be Dan. I don't think that's my nature. My nature is more methodical, although when I was competing, I was trying to do basically the Gordon Ryan scenario, like, let's take this guy down, pass, get their back, and finish them. And I did do that in the finals. So, yeah, but I'm probably more methodical than some of these guys, you know. I think Gordon's probably pretty methodical. That's what he's going to do. He's just going to get on your back and then he's going to choke you and there's nothing he can do about it. Yeah, exciting stuff. So, Dan, I did prepare for this podcast. So I have some things to talk about here other than the card.
Right.
I think we're on point. We didn't get too far off point, but right. I think we got about 15 minutes or so, maybe sure. more. So I told you I was reading that Fighter's Mind book.
Yeah.
Really good book. Pleasantly surprised with it. And like I said, every chapter is sort of self-contained. So at lunch, I can just read one of the chapters, like 15 pages, and I get something good out of it, you know? So I was reading, and I'm not even sure what chapter this one was in, but this concept came up. It's called Investing in Loss. So Josh Waitzkin, he's the guy, he was one of Marcelo Garcia's students, and he was also the kid from Searching for Bobby Fischer. They made that movie back in the
And he was
turn
like
of the
an
century.
Actor?
He's the kid.
Oh, okay.
They made the movie. They wrote the book and the movie about him. So
okay.
he was a chess prodigy as a kid, and then he became a black belt under Marcelo Garcia.
Hmm.
And he also did like Tai Chi or something, which I really don't know anything about that as a sport. But his teacher was this guy, William C.C. Chen. And I just wanted to reference them because that's where they came up with this concept, investing in loss. And my son and I have been talking a lot about this and thinking about it. So, of course it makes sense. Like there's that old saying in jiu-jitsu, you either win or you learn. There is no losing, right? That's kind of the obvious thing. And but we were thinking about how, like, and of course, you want to study your defeats. Like when I lost, what was the mistake I made? So
is this the general idea of investing in loss? Like spend time on it, like
spend time
energy
on
the loss of what happened.
Exactly, Dan.
Instead of just like an initial hurt feelings or something.
Right.
Sort of dig into it.
Dig into it.
That's what I'm imagining it means.
Exactly that. And but also in practice too. So I think somebody training in jiu-jitsu, they could fall in the trap of, in practice, of thinking, I don't want anyone to get over on me. I don't want anyone to pass my guard. I don't want anyone to tap me. And then your game can shrink a little bit and get kind of defensive. And then that is going to really inhibit your development. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you're better off trying, like reaching, going, doing something that isn't part of your bread and butter, maybe. And then you maybe overreach and you get a negative result. You get swept or you get submitted or something. But you're probably advancing your long-term progress so much more. And that's investing in loss. You know what I mean? He also talks about study your defeats without ego. So it's like you really want to get into the technical issues. Like, why did that fail technically? Not because I didn't try hard enough or I'm not strong enough or I'm not fast enough or smart enough. It's like, what technically is going on? But I think that's a key one for me, that let defeats happen in practice. You know, I really noticed it when I was doing a private lesson with crew Mark Deligrati, and he's like, let me watch you shadow box. So I'm shadow boxing, and if somebody's watching the shadow box, sometimes you can feel a little self-conscious, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to make any mistakes in front.
You can be walking and think someone's watching you walk, and suddenly you're like, how do I walk again?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Am I walking normally? Like, if you knew, like, a crowd, if you had to walk down the middle of a hallway and you're like, it's going to be lined with people, and you're told they're all going to watch how you walk, you might be like, am I
trip and fall on my face, right?
Exactly. Like it becomes weird. So I can imagine with shadow boxing, suddenly you're like, you feel all weird. And
you feel a little weird and you don't want to make a mistake because you don't want to let your teacher down or something. And that is a mistake.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you want to do what you would do when you're fighting so you can make a mistake so your instructor can see your mistakes and now we can work on them and correct them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like we don't want to hide our mistakes. We want to make our mistakes in practice so we can get better at them.
Right. So in this case, even making the mistake or saying a loss here, it's not just getting tapped. It can be, and not even just getting your guard passed. There's a million variations of it, right? It could be failing to finish a submission that you're trying for, right?
Right.
Because it happens to me a lot where I can't finish, and then I think it's always useful to be like, why couldn't I why didn't you tap? You know, like what happened? Why couldn't I finish that?
That's a good point, Dan. And I think there's two types of training. One type you might do coming up close to a competition where you're honing the stuff you already have. You're making your tools sharper. But then there's another type of training where you're expanding your game for your long-term development. And that's really where you have to invite defeat, because you can't expand your game without taking chances and doing something new, which is inevitably you're going to get a negative result, which is fine, because if you get the negative result, you can start calibrating and narrowing down and calibrating into where you need to be. And then the third part of this investing in losses in competition. So if you're competing, this I think is very hard for competitors to do sometimes. And they suddenly realize, I'm losing. My strategy isn't working. I need to change strategy or change tactic. And how often have you seen, especially in boxing or MMA, I think, where a guy comes out and he's trying to implement a strategy and it's not working. So he loses the first round, the second round, the third round, fourth round, and then like fifth round, like, you got to do something. You can't go out there and do what you just did.
But don't you think, I feel like usually they don't change.
They don't. It seems very hard to do, right?
Right.
We recognize this isn't working. I got to do something else.
I imagine also because people hype themselves up. So they're like, he won't be able to stop your takedown. You've gotten so good with your takedown. He won't be able to stop it. Maybe two rounds in, you're like,
He's
clearly stopping it, but it's hard to change because you've spent literally months hyping yourself up that's your strategy and it's going to work,
right?
Both those things.
Yeah.
And so then when it's like, it's not working and it's not good enough, it's hard on the spot to be like, well, what do I do now? You know,
I think it's an exceptional skill. Not a lot of people have. I recently watched this YouTube video during lockdown here where you get all this time. And it was a breakdown of a boxing match from the late 80s. It was Roberto Duran versus Iran Barkley. Are you familiar with those guys?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the match. Yeah.
You're familiar with the match?
Yeah.
So let me set the stage for you. I went to Cancun, Mexico with my girlfriend at the time, took her on a trip down there, and she got sick the very first day there. She got bad water, you know, a bad ice cube or something. So she's completely out of it, laying in the bed, like half unconscious. And I'm standing there, first night of the vacation, with nothing to do. I turn on the TV. They got this fight on, Roberto Duran, Iran Barkley. And my memory of it was Barkley was pretty dominant in winning the first half of the fight. And then somehow Roberto Duran, who was a big underdog, because he was, I think this was a middleweight fight, like, he started his career at lightweight, and then he fought at welterweight, and then I think he won some title at junior middle against Davey Moore. I don't know if you remember that fight. And now he's fighting Iran Barkley. So
he's an underdog because Prime Duran at lightweight is considered one of the best lightweights of all time.
Yeah.
But you're saying this is later.
Now he's at 160 or something.
Heavier weight. So he's not that
long. And he had recently, prior to this match, Tommy the Hitman Hearns knocked him out viciously. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
He hit him with a straight right. He like bounced off the ropes and face planted. It was just awful. And then Iran Barkley subsequently knocked out Hearns. So by the boxing math, Barkley was going to really knock him out.
Yeah.
And so this guy put up this video. I forget who the guy was. And he broke it down like kind of round by round. Different. And essentially Roberto Duran did that. His strategy wasn't working. So he adjusted, and then Barkley made an adjustment, and then Duran adjusted. So they were adjusting their strategy through the fight. I didn't know enough about boxing and fighting at the time to appreciate all the technical subtleties. And when I saw this video, then I could really appreciate it. But I could sense the momentum shifts in the fight. And, of course, I was rooting for Duran just because he was like the shorter guy. He was a big underdog, so it would be exciting to see him pull it off, and he ended up winning a split decision in that fight. Great fight, yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, that rare ability to adjust and adapt.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I thought of this as a coach, it would also be hard if your approach, again, is like to instill confidence, like he won't be able to stop your takedown, to then be like, but if he stops your takedown, you know, like to, it makes it harder to coach a backups plan.
Right.
Because you're like, trust me, you're going to knock them out. And then but if you don't, you might want to do this. Like, it's hard to do that, right? Like, if you take that approach of this is going to work, he can't stop you, it's hard to install a backup plan going into
a
fight.
That's a good point,
you know?
Dan. You're probably better off with the more balanced approach of like, you're going to go in there and you're going to put it on him. And if he can last, God bless him. But you're very likely going to take him out before he makes it to the end. Yeah, you're right. You probably should come up with, the plan. We're going to knock him out in the first round. That's probably not a good plan, right? Because when it doesn't happen, it's going to be much harder to pivot to something else.
Yeah, that's I see it constantly in MMA.
UFC. Interesting.
Like you've said all the time, people that they just can't. They seem to follow their losing strategy.
They can't adjust. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes even the corners are pretty good and try to have them adjust and they don't.
They don't. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So that's investing in loss. Good stuff. Now, the second point I came up with is, I forget what chapter this was in, but it's basically a team can save you. So if you're a fighter, especially an MMA fighter, like you just said, Dan, like you create... You're in training camp for 8 weeks. You create this version of the universe in the future where you beat the guy. You knock the guy out. And then when you get knocked out, it just crushes your whole world, crashes your whole worldview. It's like, what? That's not the reality I've been envisioning for the last 8 weeks. What the hell? So it's very devastating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what, you know, how can you survive that? And part of it is, if you have a team around you, you know what I mean? Because a big part of it is, it goes back to that selfish gene. When you lose a fight like this, you feel like, you know, your selfish gene feels like all this esteem has just been lost. You know what I mean? Like, I'm never going to be able to survive and replicate now because nobody's going to have me. You know what I mean? Because I just got dominated. I just lost. But if you have a team or a good family that is going to be there behind you, that I think mitigates that sense of a loss of esteem. What do you think about that?
Yeah. And I think this is a clear point that doesn't only apply to an MMA fight. It applies it doesn't even have to be athletics, right? This can be a big loss at a job or, you know, or
you get fired.
Yeah. A big meeting that went badly or, you know, it's like have that support system, that team around you that's going to.
Getting fired pull you can out be devastating for a person, can it? I think we already had this conversation. Yeah.
I was fired in high school. But I probably deserved it. I mean, I sort of didn't. Did we talk about this? It was from a lawyer's office. A lawyer. The 5-second version is there was this lawyer. I was just like the high school kid who came in, you know, for the summer.
Yeah.
And half the time I was sitting there, I didn't know what to do.
Hate those jobs.
And the lawyer was kind of a smarmy kind of guy. And there was one, the last incident that I was there, he told a really, really stupid, dirty joke.
Huh.
Which I won't repeat here. I could repeat to you later. It was really stupid.
Okay.
Like really, really dumb. And I couldn't laugh. Like, it was so dumb. It was so shockingly dumb when he said the punchline. I was like, what? You know what I mean? Like, you heard a joke sometime where it's so dumb that you're like, that was a joke?
Yeah.
And there was this, one of the secretaries next to me, like, laughing her head off. And I was like, looking at him, I'm like, I remember thinking, like, my brain was going like, laugh, you know, like, and I was sort of like trying to smile, but I did this awkward, like, and he looked at me. I was like, you know, like, and he actually got a mad look and was like, you didn't like that? And I'm like, no,
that's funny. Clever. Yeah.
You know, it's not that I didn't like it. Like, it's funny. I don't know. And he literally like stormed around and like went into his office and slammed the door. And the secretary was laughing, looked at me like, shook her head, was like, and I was like,
How could you do that, Dan? I think I'm in trouble.
And I got called over the weekend. That was Friday. And I got called. And they were like,
Don't come back.
We don't need you.
That is hilarious. And, I've heard that story before.
I've told the story. So at the time, I'd also tell the story. That story is like totally not my fault. Like,
no.
This jerky lawyer. That said, what I'm leaving out is, like, I think I was like, I didn't know how to, you know, I was half the time sitting around
twiddling your thumbs,
doing anything. Like, right. I wasn't that needed at the office. You know, I was like, what do I do? And I think if I was more social and sort of like chatting with everyone, and like, I could have, they would have been like,
if let's you're keep, laughing, if, yeah, you, yeah. if you provided a laugh track,
yeah, let's keep this kid around, you know, yeah. like, what do we care?
He's got probably, a great sense of humor,
probably paying me nothing, you know, so I was like, let's keep the kid around, but I was probably like a little antisocial. And then it's like summer and I'm in high school, like I go out late with my friends and kind of like come in like to the office, like, you know, like
hungover,
yeah, like maybe a little bloodshot. They were probably like, I thought I was like, good morning, and they were probably looking like, look at this kid. You know, like, you know, at that age, you think you're like getting away with stuff. And then yeah. as an adult, you realize you weren't getting away with anything. Like all adults were just leaving you alone. So he did. It was wrong, the incident that he fired me. But also, you know, was I the greatest employee? Probably not. I think I know I have friends that were always great employees. Like even back in high school, they were like, I'll get there early. I'll work hard. I'll show everyone that I'm the best summer employee they ever had. And I was probably more of a bum. You know, like come, like rolling in, like not doing a good job. So, but I went on to another, you know, I had another job the next week, you know, so it didn't really matter.
Not a big deal.
And, but, you know, again, maybe lesson learned. Maybe the next job, I'm like, let me be a little more careful here.
Oh, right.
In fact, yeah, the next job was totally different because it was a warehouse. It was manual labor. And everyone in that warehouse was so lazy that I was like a great worker, you know what I mean? Like they'd literally sit there and I'd be like, there'd be like garbage lying around and I'd be like, can I just, maybe I'll just sweep this up? And everyone'd be like, oh, la-di-da, you know, like is that kind of atmosphere?
Like, oh, or they get mad at you for putting too much effort out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because I'd be like, we're literally sitting here in a 90 degree warehouse, just sitting here. Maybe I'll just like move the stuff that needs to be moved. People are like, oh, Mr. Go-Getter, Mr. Trying to make us all look up. Bad. Yeah, suck up and feel like I have nothing to do. So
sounds awful.
Yeah, it's just a different kind of
job.
Oh,
my God.
Well, these little summer high school jobs were terrible.
Pretty terrible, yeah. Very funny. Ooh. All right, Dan. I think we should wrap it up on that note.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to getting back. It's May 8th. May 18th. Is that what they're saying now? 10 more days?
Yeah. So the prediction is the episode, 2 episodes from now, will be out the other side.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
We'll see.
Yeah. I miss all the students. Miss seeing everybody, hanging out with them. Yeah. I can't wait to get back.
We'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon. So everybody stay strong. Hope everybody's safe and healthy. And look forward to seeing you guys soon. Take care.